ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily Podcast time. You might be thinking, that's Ben Cameron. Where's Corbin Middlemass? He's away this week for your Tuesday episode. Five drops per week. If you're not listening to all of them, you are missing out. Five very different flavours. Make sure you've subscribed in the podcast store. It'll let you know whenever there is a new episode and you can listen along. Ben Cameron in for Corbin, as I said, and I'm alongside the 300 gamer, former Western Bulldogs captain, Footscray heartthrob.
Yep.
Have I missed anything there, Bob?
Well, 312 games, same as Jack Dyer.
Yep.
And
when
Stephen
I think Captain
Sulmani.
Blood, I think.
Yep. You. Yep. Captain Kickout and Captain Blood.
How are you?
Good I'm good. You. It's really good to see you.
This is the show where we go back over all of the Monday night footy shows. Mm-hmm. How do you put it?
Oh, it's the carnivorous Monday night footy shows. The meat lovers. It's salad dodgers. There's a few names for it.
I'll tell you what.
It's rough and tumble in there on a Monday night.
It is. I felt like I had the meat sweats at the end of all of it. I would have liked a blood pressure test after watching 4 hours of footy shows back to back to back to back.
Yeah, you need just a couple of green smoothies in the next couple of days just to cleanse the system.
Okay, we're going to start with this. Josh Fraser was on AFL 360 last night, and of course he is the man that everyone's looking at the moment, the caretaker coach of Carlton, the first ever caretaker coach to go 5-0 as a caretaker, and this is what he had to say about the gig last night on AFL 360.
So we're not trying to trick you at all. So how do you not know? Is a question for you, because you've famously said you're probably back on the 15th of May, don't think I'm quite ready yet. Yet everything you've talked about, everything Adam talks about, coach your own team, you've been development, you've been assistant coach, you come over here, you're now in the hot seat, you've taken it all before you. How can you not know that you're ready?
I can only assume that you get to a stage where you have a chance to reflect on all your experiences, and I'm in a position now where I've got a great deal of belief in what I can do as a coach, but I know I'm not the finished product. And again, this opportunity has given me a chance to continue to grow. I don't know exactly when you know you're ready or when you're not, but personally, I haven't lifted my eyes too much to consider what that might look like for me, other than staying really present to this moment and helping our footy club continue to get better and make sure that at the end of my opportunity here as interim coach, our footy club's better placed.
Is it possible that could yet be the Carlton job?
Personally, that is something I haven't considered, purely because my mandate right now is to help this football club grow, and I haven't lifted my eyes to consider that.
Is this Carlton job a job worth fighting for?
I think any job would be a job worth fighting for, and this one in particular, given the size of the Carlton Football Club, and I've felt this already, the power and support that we have as a club, and I think it'd be an exciting opportunity for whoever's ready to go through a process and earn that job.
So that was Josh Fraser last night on AFL 360, a couple of different bits of a longer slab butted together there. One thing he is already doing, Bob, is talking like a senior coach. Isn't he? He's got that down.
Well, I feel like Josh Fraser, for an interim coach, because of the amount of intrigue built on the back of, you know, this winning form of his, we're hearing from him more. And it's being highlighted more. So I think his carefully chosen words there, and I think they are carefully chosen, and I think they stitch together really well. I'm not saying it's insincere, but I think Josh will absolutely put his hand up for the job. It's just a matter of when he does. So I think he's just playing it quite strategically, as he's entitled to, as he totally should. But if they keep winning, that script, I think, will start to get tired pretty soon.
Yeah. Oh, I think
the jig is up. Like, I believe he wants to coach them.
Yeah.
If they keep winning, he has to be considered. He has to go through the process. Whether that's an inconvenience for Graham Wright and the Carlton Footy Club, I'm not too sure. My gut feel is that maybe it is. I don't think it's their absolute A1 scenario for the optics to have the interim coach appointed. I don't think that's their ideal scenario. 5 weeks ago, I don't think it was even a possibility for them.
Mm.
And now it potentially is.
So they've won five in a row. They're probably going to get to seven in a row, because they've got West Coast and Richmond in the the next 2 weeks. I mean, you don't want to put the cart before the horse, but they could win those.
They absolutely should win those two.
No caretaker coach has taken a team to finals before, which is a real chance of doing. The thing I think about here is that what is fascinating with this is I feel like Carlton look at what happened with David Teague and the Teague train and the groundswell of emotion that came up behind him that really forced their hand to appoint David Teague. That then eventually didn't work out. And now I feel like Carlton is saying, well, you don't want to make that mistake again. It would be so Carlton if they didn't appoint the right guy.
Exactly.
Because previously they made the wrong decision.
Okay, so let's go through the history of who they had. So they had one of their own, the favourite son, Brett Ratton. Oh, that didn't work out. Okay, then we've gone, we had the interim. We had David Teague. Oh, that didn't work out. Then we've gone the apprentice of the great Alistair Clarkson and Brendan Bolton. That didn't work. Well, let's get Mick Malthouse, the one Messiah. Who's done it all, the Messiah. He's done it. Here's the thing. Just forget about the past, Carlton. Live in the now, man.
Yep. Be where your feet are.
But right here, right, forget about the optics. Forget about it. And I'm not saying they are, but there is this sort of, how are they going to shape? And even, you know, I'm sort of leading the witness a little bit by saying, you know, that it's an inconvenience for them. I would like to think that Graham Wright and the Carlton Footy Club are just saying, don't worry about the history. Right here, right now.
Yeah.
Who is the best coach for this group? How good is this group? How good can they be? Who's the best person right now? Get the best coach. Stop trying to second guess how this will look if it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
That's one of my frustrations with AFL.
What if it all goes
whenever
right?
I hear due diligence, I'm thinking, are you just, you're dotting the I's and you're getting it all documented. So, hey, if this falls over, hey, we were prepared. We did that's secondary. Who's the best person for the job right now?
But Jared said something last night, which I thought was really insightful. He said he feels like everyone's on two different sides of this. Like it's either he can't do it, he shouldn't do it, or he has to do it. He's like, what about the middle ground, which is he should just be in the process. And then they've got the perfect deniability if it all goes wrong and he doesn't win the gig. We put him up against the other candidates and he either won the job or he didn't. And I think that's fair. And he has the advantage as well that he's doing the job at the moment. So they're seeing that as well as his presentation. If he's the best man, appoint him. If he's not, appoint someone else.
Do you think it's too simplistic to say that Essendon will probably go for an experienced senior coach and Carlton will go for an untried senior coach?
Well, I don't want to jump ahead of the show here today. But I think...
That's a little clip to me there.
You've said
I've jumped ahead.
Well, you haven't read the rundown, but that's...
You didn't send me the rundown?
That's why you haven't read it. I think Essendon will go an inexperienced coach as well.
Really?
Yeah.
That
is a nice segue. So Tom Morris last night on Agenda Setters, he spoke about the Essendon coaching gig and this is what he had to say.
The people I've spoken to in the last 48 hours tell me that they are progressing pretty well behind the scenes to create a process and develop criteria to be the next coach. Now, Kane, you asked me on radio on Saturday on Crunch Time, how are they developing this criteria? Is it the panel that develops the criteria or is it the other way around? And my understanding is Andrew Welsh is speaking to lots of Essendon people within the club. They'll develop a criteria and then they'll go and do a panel after that and then appoint a coach. But things are starting to move behind the scenes.
So do you think part of that criteria says you have to be an Essendon person?
I'm not sure whether it says you have to be an Essendon person, but my belief is that is the highly likely scenario, that it is an Essendon person being a senior coach.
So then we're down to two or three.
Yeah, at this early point, it's hard to see anyone but Dean Solomon or James Hurd getting this job.
So that was Tom Morris last night on Agenda Setters. I've also heard that they are working on a dossier about what they want out of their senior coach before they put their panel together and they're trying to get a little bit of an idea as to what exactly they want in their next coach. How do you react to all of that? Dean Solomon or James Hurd is the likely outcome, according to Tom.
I'm not surprised in the sense that those two are still the favourites. That doesn't surprise me at all. I don't know if this makes me a hypocrite, but for that to be explicit or even alluded to that it has to be an Essendon person, I just cannot wrap my head around that. Why? I just don't understand. I don't know what that really means. Why does the Essendon Footy Club situation right now demand that it needs to be someone who has had a former attachment with the club. And I love heart and soul connection, the lineage of football clubs. I love all of that.
You're a believer in the spirit and the soul of a football club.
No, absolutely. Yeah. There's a real energy and a driving force to that. But I'm not shut off to adding to that by bringing someone in who's had experience elsewhere. That seems like that's bizarre to me.
So I'm a little bit with Corbin.
Surely that's not actually documented. That wouldn't be explicitly documented anywhere of some attachment or some experience with the Essendon Football Club would be preferred in terms of a priority list for the. If that is written down or conveyed verbally, I would be absolutely stunned by that.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Given we're talking about the documentation of what they want in the coach, you're right. But it does tell you that they feel like the soul of the place has left. Like it's left the building. And maybe that was when they left Windy Hill because they couldn't boot out the Bowls Club and they went to Tullamarine. But it feels like that's what they clearly believe.
Yeah. Which, I mean, is that going to be part of the solution or does that encapsulate the bigger problem?
Yep. We'll leave that one there. On to the umpiring last night. So Jared Waitley pointed out a couple of umpiring decisions in the GWS Carlton game, a game that I broadcast, one in which a holding the ball was paid where there was no tackle laid, and then also a mark that was paid, but then advantage was paid. You can't pay advantage from a mark. This is what Jared Waitley had to say about the umpiring in our game at the moment.
You saw two of the strangest umpiring moments ever, and these are so out of place in a professional sport. So this gets paid as a mark. The umpire, I think, was going to pay interference to Evans and then just completely panicked.
Yeah.
And then we saw a holding the ball without an actual tackle.
Yeah, that's right.
So nothing happens in isolation. I'm a big believer in this. This is part of a broader conversation. We have a professional sport that's got 9 games and we only played 7 on the weekend. Mm. I don't think we have enough professionally competent umpires to man these games at the moment. With the 4 umpire system, we are actually stretched beyond breaking point. So I think the game's got a real issue here, and it should lead to a tabling of a serious conversation around going back to 3 umpires for a period of time.
For the quality purpose.
While you school up, and I refuse to accept that there's only 40 umpires across the entire country who are capable of officiating in an AFL game.
So that was Jared last night. Where do you stand on going back to 3 umpires rather than 4?
I don't know enough about the inside machinations of the demands of umpiring of 4 to 3, but I'm open to it. I'm totally open to it. I wouldn't be like, oh, you can't do that. And I think I'd be more than willing to observe and see if that was worth a try. The only thing I would add to that conversation, and this is from a playing experience of often when you watch a game and players, because they, you know, it's a game of mistakes, both in the umpiring and playing. But when there's mistakes that are so unusual, like they're so strange where you think, I haven't seen that before and I'll probably never see that again. A player just, you know, running off the ground when the ball's in front of him.
Yeah.
From my perspective, generally that was because the player had so much information in their head that they are totally clouded by what's right in front of them.
Yeah.
That was what I would sort of wonder and question. So we talk about the capability of umpires and we know how skilled they are. Okay, well, if we need more, go down to 3. Okay. Mm. Every time we change the game, every time we tinker with the rules, every time we make these adjustments,
it's harder.
It's more information for these umpires that have a pretty tough job already. So when you see them make really unusual, like once in a season type mistakes, I think, gee, how much information have you got in your head right now?
Well, even when you listen to Ray Chamberlain speak about holding the ball and like the cascading decision tree that they have to work through, very complicated like that. You've got to be able to work through that. What I would say about the umpires is this is a rebuilding group. So this is a group that is a little bit younger. And the other point is that if you do go back to, I don't think it's as simple as saying, look, we'll go back to 3, because if you go back to 3, they're running more, there's a chance that the senior umpires, like the older but more experienced, better decision makers, are one, under more fatigue, so are the decisions impacted, and two, do they break down? So then if they break down because they're running further because there's three umpires, well, then they're not umpiring at all for a period of time.
Well, that's the sort of machinations I'm not privy to.
And the other point is that having four umpires, because they run so much less, it sometimes allows the better decision makers to double up.
Yeah.
So you have to put all of that into the melting pot as to how big is the divergence between a really experienced umpire and the most junior umpire when it's 1, 2, 3, 4, as opposed to if it's just 1, 2, 3, and then all of those issues. If we lose one due to injury, if they make worse decisions because they're fatigued, or we have some guys double up with the four. So that's all got to go into the melting pot. The other point that I feel at the moment, Bob, is I feel like there's a little bit of a conflation for some people between what is, and this is not the case with Jared, who's highly, highly intelligent, knows the rules inside out, knows the tribunal inside out, etc. But I feel like for some people, players, coaches and fans, there's a conflation between the rules and how the rules are actually written for the umpires to officiate and people's frustrations with those and bad umpiring.
Mm.
So sometimes people go, the stand rule, oh, why is that 50? Well, that's the rule.
That's the rule. That's how it's written. So the quality of umpiring gets called into question when it's
actually the rule book.
Actually the rule book.
So a player...
And there will always be interpretation.
Yeah. So like a player, I was watching, I think it was Geelong and Gold Coast on the Friday night, and Max Holmes comes running, careening in from behind the mark to stand the mark. And the umpire says, mate, that's 50. You can't do that. You can't enter from behind the mark to stand it. And Max Holmes flails his arms around like he's about to take off. Like, what's that for? It's like, well, mate, that's the rule.
Mm-hmm.
You can't enter from there. So, and I feel like fans get frustrated. And this is sometimes where we end up. The umpires cop the brunt of, they're just officiating it to the letter of the law, as they should be. Do you agree with that?
Can I throw something else into the mix? I think what you've outlined there, it makes a lot of sense to me. I also feel like when we hit winter,
yeah,
I feel like the whole industry gets a little bit more pessimistic, and the rose-coloured glasses are out. It's like, it's the worst the umpiring's ever been. We said this last winter.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as bad as what people make out.
It's cold. It's dreary. Everyone's tired.
I used to be an umpire too, you know. Yeah, sure, it was back in, you know, 1998 in the under-12s and under-14s. Single umpire, had to do it all myself. So, you know, I see you umpires.
I umpired a pre-season game and I just kept forgetting to blow the whistle. I'm like, yeah, it's holding the ball. Everyone's still going. I'm like, oh, yep, bring it back.
My favourite move was, play on, he tried. Play on, he tried. It was only boys playing back then. Now it would be play on, they tried.
As Ray always says, if it's not a heck yeah, it's a heck no. So you're ahead of your time. Good umpiring. Not just the Monday night show. So this started on Sunday night with First Crack
Sunday
and David
roast.
King. It went on to Agenda Setters with Nick Riewoldt and then Matthew Lloyd as well on Footy Classified. St Kilda, a heavy defeat, or not a heavy defeat, but a bad defeat to the Western Bulldogs. Nightmare game. Lost Jack Sinclair to a calf injury. Lost Tom DeConing to broken ribs and a punctured lung. Rowan Marshall, a shoulder injury.
Yeah.
We don't know how bad that will be at the moment. But across the three shows, this was some of the discussion surrounding St Kilda and a recurring theme.
Can't make strawberry jam out of cow dung.
No.
Right? So if you want Ross to be successful, they've got to support him. They've got to get their picks right, for starters, because they're too high a pick grade to get wrong. So they've got to make them players.
My concern centres around the young talent and how much they have come on in the last couple of years. So they did invest pretty heavily throughout this period. And you can see some of the names there. So Filippo, we know, has been really well paid. He had a good week in the VFL on the weekend, but hasn't been able to do it consistently at AFL level. And then Travaglia, Taru, you know, it's those three guys where that organic growth is going to come from. So you can talk about the recruits as much as you like, the high-priced recruits and DeConing and Silvani, who I think has been a great pickup, Liam Ryan, we know. They're the players that need to really pop for the Saints to contend.
Yeah, and when you go on improvement, we looked at all the splurge and we wondered who of those guys was going to help them, and they've all been okay. Liam Ryan's had some good weeks. Zach Silvani's been good. TDK hasn't been the... the million-dollar player, but he's been okay. But it's your kids that you want to see. So Tarou, Travaglia, Philippou, they've had some early picks that just haven't gone on with it, you know, over time. So that's really hurt them, and they're stuck where St Kilda have been stuck for a long, long time, and they're so far off the top.
What do you make of all of that, Bob?
Sounds like Lloydie and Nick Riewoldt are hanging out drinking coffees, coming up with the same script. That was almost word for word. That was scary. I think it's interesting. I could feel the air almost go out of the commentary box on Sunday when I think you may have asked the question, if they miss finals altogether, is this season a failure?
I think that was Clinchy.
Was it Clinchy, yeah. Was it? You've handballed that one. Hospital handball there.
It was Clinchy, though. It wasn't me.
But I said, and it sort of fits in with what we've just heard there. I think St Kilda, this year, whether they make it or don't, it's a 24-month report card for me.
Yeah.
With the recruits and with the draftees, a little bit more time. So there's always eyes on them because of the high-profile recruits and the amount they've paid them and all of those things, and Ross being there, and there's always a bit of added interest with St Kilda. I'm looking forward to the end of next year. Where are they at? Because I think when you bring in a whole heap of new talent in a single go, it just takes a while. It generally takes a little while for that to gel. So I'm just sort of holding a little bit on St Kilda. I haven't given up that, you know, it's a failure or it's a bastard. No. Just give it a little bit more time. Not too much more. I think by the end of next year, then I'd be watching them pretty closely.
Oh, I think Ross should come out and defend the kids. Like, all the blame can't be put on three guys who didn't play on the weekend, I think, anyway. Like, they're young
kids. What do you mean defend? Like, just on the back of the Sunday night, Monday night?
Yeah, I think so.
Meat eaters.
Well, if he gets asked about it in his press conference, I think he should defend the kids and say, look, they're young, they're developing. They're not the reason why we're not going as well.
No, well, they had a good enough team on the weekend to win. They've got a good enough list to be above where they're at the moment.
Yeah. The last of our bits out of the Monday night footy shows, back to agenda setters, and Sam Mitchell was there all night. He was sitting there in his club polo as part of the panel, and this was how a little interesting dialogue played out.
Tassie need a new coach. You would be top of the list.
I noticed this. This
you
is
got
not
top of the list.
You got the pen.
No. So I should actually tell the people out there. There's a run sheet, and when a guest comes on, they definitely leave it a bit off. And this
two,
is obviously
2:30.
Oh,
sorry.
It's on your one.
That's my handwriting.
That's on your one.
Okay. No. You're not going to avoid the. Will you answer their call when they ring if they haven't rung already?
Oh, I've had multiple meetings with them. No, I haven't. No, I'm contracted to Hawthorn. Very happy at Hawthorn, and we've got a big job to do in front of me right now, and we'll be very focused on that.
So that was Sam Mitchell last night.
It was all very
night.
Chummy,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Top of the list is interesting though, because I could be wrong, but I thought I'd heard Kane say previously that Chris Scott should be the first person they call. John Longmire would be near the top of the list, but maybe he's defining top of the list as sort of
so,
top three
well,
or
that,
four.
Well,
or
that
five,
sounds like Kane's direct rankings of who he thinks are the best coaches in the game. So that's he's working off the back of that, I suppose.
Who do you think should be top of the list?
As in, who do I think will be, or who personally I think...
Who personally you would call? Then we'll do the second question.
I think it's a perfect job for Nathan Buckley and then Ken Hinckley.
So you go Buckley and Hinckley ahead of John Longmire?
Yep.
Interesting. Okay, why is that?
Oh, it's by shades, but I feel like they've got more of a gregarious nature
and
to galvanise the state. Yep.
That's an interesting point because...
Not that John Longmire wouldn't be good at it, but I just feel like they've got a little bit more of that front man.
Yeah, it's a bit of a
charisma.
PR job as well,
It's a bit of a charisma vote.
Yep, a charisma vote, I like it. A little bit of an aura vote.
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
So, okay, let me ask you this. What was the second part of our question? It was around who you think they'll end up with.
Yeah.
Who's that?
It's similar.
Yeah, you think they will go down that path?
I've still got Buckley as the favoured.
Let me ask you this question. Blues, Essendon, Tasmania. Who ends up where?
Okay, so as we sit here right now, I will go with Tasmania, Buckley, Carlton, Enright. Essendon. Jeez, Essendon's hard. Mm. Oh, I think Solomon still. Essendon.
So do I.
Yep.
So do I.
Who have you got for the other two?
I've got, I think Hinkley ends up in Tasmania.
Yep.
And I think Enright ends up at Carlton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so that's...
So one out, yeah.
I don't know if I said Hinkley last night. Might have changed overnight.
Hey, this is, you know, this is not the political system. Yeah, it's, we're not chained to these things.
No, it's not. This, do you know, that's one of my bugbears in footy at the moment, that I feel like there is kind of... It's kind of like the way political support works in society at the moment, that people are so partisan and they are wedded to their positions. Like, what happened to... When the facts change...
Changing your ethics and your morality, okay, that's sort of a bit different. No, but changing your decisions because the environment has changed or the, you know, the world has changed.
Have we lost the ability to do that in the world and in football broadly?
Well, we've... broadly, and it doesn't get more broadly than this, like in the world, we are being pushed to the extremes more.
Yeah.
Are you in or are you out? Which corner are you in? And once you've decided, that's where you stay. Well, okay.
But I feel like...
I'd like to be a bit more malleable than that here at the ABC.
No, I agree too. Like, I'll change my opinion on footy teams when they change the way they go about it and things change. But I feel like often now it's, I felt this way, so I'm going to defend that for as long as I possibly can. So
you have been pretty staunch on your brand of polo shirt that you often wear in the podcast.
Loyalist.
Yeah.
I don't like economy of decision-making, Bob. I don't want to have to wake up and think, what am I wearing today? I just go...
Yep. Yep. One less decision.
One less decision, like Steve Jobs. Just quickly, I do want to say about the Sam Mitchell thing there. Fascinating. So Sam Mitchell has switched management companies. He's now managed by Bravo Talent Management,
okay,
which is a part of Craig Hutchison's empire.
Yep.
The show Agenda Setters is produced by Rainmaker, which is part of Craig Hutchison's
empire.
And they're talking about Sam Mitchell's contract and his future at Hawthorn, where his contract until the end of 2027 with a link to Tasmania as well.
Well, it was a very warm, convivial atmosphere. It was very chummy. And I've not heard Sam Mitchell's name be linked to Tasmania anywhere before last night.
Interesting. Bob, great work from you as always.
Are we done?
Yep.
All right, let's get a salad.
You've been strong on that. Yeah, I need juice cleanse on my way out. Great work from you. It is ABC AFL Daily. Be a friend, tell a friend, and you can get your name on the Wall of Fame. 5 drops per week. If you're not listening to them all, you're missing out. Great to have your company.